Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in the shoe, but the sun is a quick spot on me.
Hello there, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM, where we bring you the latest news and discoveries from all corners of the universe. I'm John Dixon and just me this evening. And you can also catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie or at www.astronomy.ie or indeed even as a podcast. And a very special welcome to those of you joining us on astronomy.fm. And of course, we welcome any queries, comments or questions that you may have of an astronomical nature. And the email is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And we also have the text or WhatsApp line, which is the same number, 087-179-1032. And we'll have a quick look around the sky to get us going. I'll give you an extended version of it a little bit as well. Mercury is on the far side of the sun at the moment, and it will not be visible in morning or evening skies from Ireland really all of this month. It's the elusive planet, but it puts its best evening appearance in the second half of March, so we can look forward to that. And experts who know how to safely locate Mercury in broad daylight might see it first in the roundabout now, actually, but don't attempt this without solar filters, etc., on your binoculars or your telescope. Venus, unfortunately, it's become too difficult to see in the morning skies at the civil twilight. It was about 6 degrees up in the southwest on the 1st of Feb, so it's just disappeared. It's not a good place to view Venus for another few months now at this stage, even though it's not until June that Venus officially lines up with the sun as well. So not a good one to see. The red planet, of course, Mars, is so stubborn to rise out of the morning twilight this year, so it's going to be difficult to see with the naked eye. And Mars was in conjunction way back in November the 18th, and it takes really until mid-May for Mars to be more than 5 degrees up in the start of the morning, so not a good one for Mars either. Jupiter, it's good, it's up at the moment, and it's a fine sight. I saw it just before we came into the studio, and it's in Aries all month. It dominates the sky this month, and it's the only bright naked eye planet that we can see at the moment, and it's around 6 p.m. when it rises into our skies, and mid-month it does not set until after midnight. If you are a great spot watcher, let's just see where we are. It's in around about now. It's actually a good time to see it if you have a pair of binoculars, and today is the 20th, 7:31 is when it appears. It's not going to appear for very long as usual, but as the planet spins fairly quickly. Tomorrow it appears again at 9:10 p.m, so it's just 10 past 9. Saturn, unfortunately as well, in conjunction with the sun, is almost unobservable this month, so you might spot it low in the southwest at the start of the month, but it's hardly worth observing at all. So not really too many planets except Jupiter. They all seem to be disappearing, but they are still there, but they're just disappearing. That big bright thing that we call the sun is the thing that gets in the way of this one. Uranus, second last planet out. It's well placed in the evening skies this month, while it's dim and needs the east at least binoculars to see it. Uranus is not far from Jupiter, and it makes it easier to locate if you're out trying to spot it. So if you want to join the one in a million club, you can just send us an email, say you have actually seen Uranus. Neptune, very dim out there. It's plus points, 7.9. It bows out of the evening skies this month, so it's going to disappear as well. So there we go. The only really one to watch is Jupiter, and it's up high in the sky at the moment, so you'll get a good chance to see that. It's the first thing that comes into our skies as it gets dark. And it's a good, fun planet to watch through a pair of binoculars as well. Now, International Space Station, unfortunately, just out of our skies in the evening time, And it comes back in. Let me just see if I can find that. Yeah, March the 14th until March the 28th. So put that in the diary. But it is visible in morning skies at the moment. And tomorrow, February the 21st, if you're up early, you can get it for a 3 minute pass at 5:06 a.m. And again at 6:39 a.m. you will get to see it, although it's starting to get bright at that stage. So the first pass, 5:06 a.m, 3 minutes, and the second one, a little bit higher in the sky at 47 degrees, is 7 minutes, and it's 6:39 a.m. in the morning. So you get a good chance to see it, and it's quite nice to see it with the blue, blacky blue sort of tinge behind, just to let us know where it is. Now, sunrise for tomorrow morning, 7:33 a.m. It sets at 17:44, which is about 5:45. And at the moment, you probably find it's very noticeable, actually, because it's getting brighter very, very quickly. There's a difference of plus 4 minutes and 5 seconds just at the moment. Tomorrow will be 4 minutes and 6 seconds. And then on the 23rd, before 7, 4:08, etc. So we're nearly at the maximum of gaining daylight at the moment, and it is certainly noticeable at the moment, certainly in the morning time and again in the evenings. Now, the moon is up at the moment. It is 86.7% lit. Fine sight, I saw it earlier on, and it will rise tomorrow at 7:02 a.m. and it will set at 14:01. So that's just after 2 o'clock, so it's something to look forward to as well. If you're into watching the full moon coming up towards the end of the month as well, which is, I think it's called the snow moon, if I'm not mistaken this time. And always nice to see a full moon with a good name on it as well. Now, if you're into meteor showers, we have a couple coming up, not until April really, the 21st and 22nd of April, are the Lyrids. You can see these from both hemispheres, so if you're listening from a little bit further away, we'll get a chance to see those from north and south of the equator. And again, the Eta Aquarids, the 5th and 6th of May. So they're the closest ones to us at the moment. Now, if you're lucky enough and you are out and it's a bright, clear sky, you will get to see maybe two, maybe three meteors per hour on a good evening, but it's always, you're looking in the right, the wrong direction, and you sort of twist your head and you see it at the corner in peripheral vision, and by the time you've turned around, it's gone. So you just have to be lucky with those things as well. Anyone ever wonder how long the year is? We always say it's 365 days, and in fact it is 365.2421988 days long. Hence, this year we have the leap year, and we get the extra day on the 29th of February as well. So that's exactly how long it is. So they call it really 365 and a quarter, 365 days and a quarter per year. So that's every 4 years we get an extra day. That's where the 29th of February comes from. Just catch a few emails, just, or should I say, texts in a moment or two's time. And if you're interested in seeing meteor showers, and just to explain what they are, they're nature's own firework display, and these are made of thousands of meteors, and they can be a spectacular sight to see, of course, if any of you have seen them. And below, we can answer a few questions. And when's the next meteor shower? I've just given you that particular one, and it's for March, but we will give you more details about that as we get closer. And the first step, of course, is to find out where the meteor shower is coming from. So that can be easily Googled on the system. When does it peak? Annual meteor showers tend to take place over several days, some even over weeks or months just before and after the peak as well. So you get a good chance to see, and it's possible to view several meteors on any day during the shower when it's active. And astronomers and veteran stargazers do have a habit of knowing where to look, and suggest trying your luck during the night of peak activity, which is normally when we face into the tails of comets and things at peak activity, around about midnight to maybe 3 or 4 in the morning. And is there a best time to view meteor showers? Yep, around about that. You can get meteors at moonrise, you can get them at sunset, you can get them at different moon phases. Do you need any special equipment? All you need is time and patience and a secluded view spot. in a good dark sky if you can, and not sure what the moon is doing this year, but you will get to see them. And you can plan your trip, so you give yourself about 15 to 30 minutes to set up and let your eyes adjust to the dark. Now, this is important because if you come from a bright light straight out, you don't see as many stars and bits and pieces as you would as if you were acclimatized to the dark. Dress for the weather, of course, just in case it is raining or it's windy or it's cold or anything like that. And meteor watching, like stargazing, can be a waiting game. And I know this too well. So bring anything that will make you your weight comfortable. Bring a couple of blankets, reclining chairs, pillows, and, of course, warm beverages. And, of course, enjoy the show. So just to give you an idea of what's coming up this year, we had the Quadrantids in January. We had the Lyrids in April. We've the Equirids in May. Perseids, these are really, really good in August. Draconids in October. The Orionids in October as well. We have the Leonids in November, Geminids in December, and the Ursids in December as well. So we will keep you up to date with what is there to see in the sky. Let's see if we can spot an odd text or two, see what's coming in. I see one or two there. Yeah, there we go. It's Alan, good evening to you. And loud and clear as usual, lock and load. Let's light this candle. There we go. We've got a spectacular moonrise in daylight, clear skies after rain in Kildare, Alan. So it's clear down there as well, which is great to know. Now, talking about asteroids. Well, these are not friends of the Earth, unfortunately. Every 100 years or so, we get a big one that comes close to us or even makes contact with us. So how can humans protect the Earth from devastating asteroids and comet impacts? And according to the National Academics and their 2023 to 2032 Planetary Science and Astrobiology Decadal Survey, namely 10, there is only one current system in the world concentrating on these efforts and doing a good job as well. It's NASA's Goldstone Solar System Radar. And it's part of the Deep Space Network. However, a new instrument concept from the National Radio Astronomy Observatory called the Next Generation Radar, and it's a system that will use the National Science Foundation's Green Bank Telescope and other current and future facilities to expand on these capabilities. Now, bigger asteroids, a lot of them would be millions of miles away when they pass the Earth, or some of them actually come between us and the Moon. And it's quite interesting to watch those through a telescope. They're just about catchable. But the ones further out need a deep sky telescopes to see them. But a lot of them are tracked. And the authorities in NASA and whoever it is do a good job of warning us. But the odd time, like the Chelyabinsk one, you get the odd one flaking through directly from the sun's direction, out of nowhere. And possibly, we'll have one or two of those in the near future. We just don't know, and they just have no warning, and they just arrive, and they are devastating if they hit, as we have seen in Tunguska in Siberia in 1922, where it wiped out over a million trees, where it came in at a low angle, and not a lot of people knew about this particular one because it's so far up in where the uninhabitable zone is because it's so cold. And then there's the one in Arizona as well, which was about 50 meters wide, and it's created a mile wide crater many moons and years ago as well. And we are listening to the Astronomy Show right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. John Dixon here until 8 p.m. It's great to have your company as always. The text line 087-179-1032 if you'd like to throw something our way just to see if we can send it back out. Now, the Japanese have successfully launched the next-gen H3 rocket. And they toasted the successful blast-off for the new flagship rocket on Saturday last, making it the third time lucky after years of delays and two previous failed attempts. So, unfortunately, these things happen. So, the next generation H3 has been mooted as a rival to the SpaceX Falcon 9 and could one day deliver cargo to bases on the moon, which would be quite exciting though if it happens in our lifetime, or certainly mine anyway. The latest launch follows Japan's successful landing last month of an unmanned probe on the moon, albeit a little bit sideways or upside down, but a wonky angle is what they called it, making it just the fifth country to land a craft on the lunar surface. So the H3 launched from the Tanegashima Space Center in southwestern Japan at 9:22 a.m. local time, which was just after midnight, by 22 minutes past midnight GMT on Saturday. So cheers and applause there could be heard from the JAXA Control Center after the live stream announced H3's engines has successfully burned, and a great sign there as well. Just keeping with the Japanese for the moment, they have said on Monday, which is only yesterday, it had successfully launched a spacecraft tasked with inspecting potentially dangerous man-made junk floating around the Earth. And that's a big problem at the moment. Millions of bits and pieces up there at the moment, from flecks of paint to spent rocket bits and pieces. And the ESA, that's the European Space Agency, estimates that around 1 million pieces of debris from satellites and rockets larger than a centimetre, which are big enough to disable a spacecraft, are in orbit. So there's a big push to get a way of getting and trapping or even catching some of the space debris that's all over there. And if you've seen the film Gravity with Sandra Bullock and George Clooney, they give you an idea of the speed that space junk flakes around, because there was one part when they were out in space and they had to avoid and use avoiding maneuvers, but it certainly gives you a touch of fear and shivers up the spine when you see things like that as well. So, and of course, they're all travelling at around 17,500 miles per hour. And it has been known that some of the astronauts on spacewalks have been hit by tiny little flecks as well, and there's been little holes pushed into their spacesuits. And of course, they're probably 7, 8, 9, 10 layers of stuff. So even though they're travelling so quickly, there weren't enough to penetrate the spacesuit. But it's something to look out for as well. Now, going to Mars is one of the things that's on the agenda just at the moment. And discovery that bacteria carried in the human gut can survive the Martian soil could have implications for crewed missions to Mars. Now, this is one of the things that they're looking into at the moment. They say that some of these bacteria could survive for days, which is not too bad for the whole thing. But as the space agencies plan for the future crewed missions to Mars, with NASA hoping to have humans step foot on the red planet as soon as the 2030s now. That's not that far away when you think about it. Scientists warn that astronauts themselves could be carrying a threat to these missions, and this threat may well live within their bodies, whoever's out there as well. So they've been researching using the new research and simulated Mars conditions systems, such as the planet's lack of water, the harsh ultraviolet radiation, and the exposure to toxic salts. And they suggest that four strains of bacteria that can be carried in the human gut may not only survive in Martian soil, or regolith as it's known, but under the right conditions could possibly thrive. So they reckon it wouldn't thrive for so long, but there are funny names like Burkholderia sepatia, there's Klebsiella, there's Pneumoniae, which is connected to pneumonia, and the Pseudomonas, and a couple of others as well, that could have the potential cause to leave a disease on the surface of the moon, or should I say, well, even the moon as well, but certainly Mars as well. So this is one of the things. So the bacteria survival from tests and samples that they brought back from Mars on some of the spacecraft have steered their way, just a bit of sight of vision, saying that they could last in the soil for up to 21 days, but these have to be under particular conditions, and they could prosper in the Martian soil. There we go. So something not really to look forward to. Now, keeping with launches, Russia launched the supply rocket to the ISS. This was just last week on the 15th, which is last Thursday. It launched the supply rocket to the ISS, one of the rare Russia-US projects kept alive since Russia's offensive against Ukraine, unfortunately. The Soyuz 2 rocket carrying the Progress MS-26, the cargo ship, was launched at the Baikonur Space Center in Kazakhstan. That's a name that we'll never, ever forget because it's one of the big ones. Russia's space agency said on its Telegram channel, showing a video of the liftoff. Now, I didn't actually see this, and the rocket was due to arrive on Saturday. So let's see what happens there. The mission is to take fuel, food, scientific equipment to the seven people currently at the space station. There are three Russian cosmonauts, two American astronauts, one Danish, and one Japanese specialist. And so Russia said in July 22 that it would withdraw from the ISS project after 2024. Now, whether this happens or not, we just don't know, because the space station itself was supposed to be supposed to have a life of around the same time as well. Now then, just sneak back to Mars just for a bit of word on Perseverance Mars rover. It encountered a hiccup on its quest to uncover the secrets of the Red Planet. The rover's team is currently assessing an issue which is holding some of the dust covers on some of their instruments open, which is allowing them to be covered in dust and affecting the positioning and anything as well. So they first noticed the problems on January the 6th, that the cover's improper positioning affects certain operational modes of the instrument, specifically its laser and spectroscopy functions. So that's only something that they can do as well. Now, I've just going it a little bit further. In fact, a good bit further. In fact, it was launched way back in the 70s. This was Voyager 1. We've got news back that the interstellar Voyager 1 spacecraft is not doing so well just at the moment, and here's what we know. And since 2023, in fact, engineers have been trying to get the Voyager spacecraft back online. There's been a couple of computer glitches, of course, with the time delay to send messages backwards and forwards online. To get there, it could take hours to go one way and hours to go the other way. So December the 12th, 2023, NASA shared with us some worrisome news about Voyager 1, the first program probe to walk away from the solar system's gravity party and enter the isolation of interstellar space. Now, that's a word. So it has disappeared out of the pull or solar activity that we have here in our own solar system. Surrounded by darkness, of course, there is nothing out there at all for a long, long time. And Voyager 1 seems to be glitching, although it's still sending back little bits of information, and it's been there for about 45 years at this stage, and having supplied us with a bounty of treasure like the discovery of the two new moons of Jupiter, it brings it up to quite a lot, 79, 80, something like that, and another incredible ring of Saturn, and the warm feeling that comes from knowing that pieces of our lives will drift across the cosmos even after we're gone, and our sun goes out and everything blows up and it just goes into oblivion. So they remain working on the spacecraft to bring it back to proper health. Whether they do or not, we just don't know. It is traveling, just to give you an idea, at 45,000 miles per hour. So that would give us from here to the Pyrenees in France, between France and Spain, in about 1 second, just to give you an exact time of the speed and an idea of how fast it's actually going as well. Now, how will Artemis 2 astronauts exercise on the way to the moon? There's a big question. This is news from Montreal in Canada, and they have simulators over there to space snacks, and astronauts are trying to practice all the facets of moon living before they head towards the lunar surface in 2025. So the 2030s, we expect to get to Mars. 2025, we hope to get to the lunar surface with a manned operations. And Artemis 2 astronaut Jeremy Hansen emphasized in the Canadian Space Agency headquarters that every single detail matters when getting ready for the big mission, as it's the first moon excursion since 1972 that will have humans on board. And I'm lucky that I was sort of old enough to remember all of this, and of course the moon landings and all the bits before that as well. So this is a thing to keep their skills sharp, to challenge themselves and the constant operational environment when you're making decisions out in space. So we'll see if we can keep up that. And of course, the Orion capsule has a lot more space than the Apollo moon capsules, with about 60% more room. And, of course, from the 60s and 70s, with the little, tiny little triangular thing of this, like a piece of cheese, really, on the top. And they were crammed into that, and they had to stay there for days. So I'm sure when they got out onto the moon, stretched their legs, they said, ah, this is great. You know. Now, just talking just about SpaceX and the Crew 8 astronaut launch for February the 28th is to make way for the private moon mission, which took off last week. So they've jiggled around a few things as well. There's the Space 8 crew. I shall introduce them to you. There are four involved. One is NASA astronaut Michael Barrett. There's NASA's Matthew Dominic and NASA astronaut Jeanette Epps. And where's the first one? Oh, yeah, Alexandra Grabenkin. He's the first one as well. He's a cosmonaut from Russia as well. So they will launch no earlier than February the 28th, and so the delay from February the 22nd. So there we go. Anyway, that is unfortunately about it for this evening. Thank you indeed for your company. And the email address for comments and questions is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks indeed to James Sweeney and Conor Leonard for making the show available as on astronomy.ie and podcasts and all that sort of high-tech stuff. That's all from me, John Dixon, from this particular edition from the Astronomy Show. And now it's music all the way until 2 a.m. right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Next, Threads, Bren Linnet's collection of music, and it's well worth a listen. And I'm lucky enough to hear it on the way home, so I get for about half an hour. So 10 p.m. to midnight, Ear to the Globe with Nigel Wood, he with his world music. Midnight After Hours with Dave Barry, jazz, blues and soul until 2 a.m. So join myself again next time. Ben, unfortunately, is away on another mission, so he'll be back in 2 weeks' time. And 7:30 is the usual time for us. So next week, we'll be back with the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thanks for listening. And say good night, John. Good night, John. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in the
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.